Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, it is Gary Hill, Jr., producer and play-by-play for the Seattle Mariners Radio Network. Gary, happy Monday. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. You know what? It was good to see the Seattle Mariners get a win yesterday, and not just that, but Logan Gilbert get his very first win. What was that like watching him? Would you like? What did you see him improve on?
I thought he was excellent. In fact, I would say his last two starts, he's been really good. His fastball has been good, which is great to see, but he's starting to land his breaking stuff, which has been phenomenal, and you can see you can see it coming, right? You can see why he is considered one of the best prospects in the Mariners system. You can see the talent there. And, you know, he had it all shown off against the Angels yesterday, the leadoff home run against Upton, and after that, shut him down. You know, five innings, just one hit after that. Worked through four walks, but seven punch-outs, a career high. It was just really good stuff. It's been a nice progression here in his first handful of starts. And, I mean, you watch him pitch, and you get very optimistic about what his future is going to be.
You know, Gary, that's one of the things that's been impressive. The thing that's impressed me the most about Logan Gilbert is that it's been muddy. He's gotten himself into jams. He hasn't had necessarily the cleanest start yet in his young career. But the last two, he's been able to punch out. He's been able to get out of jams. He's been able to finish strong as he continues to keep working in later into the innings, you know, the fourth, fifth, sixth, so to speak. How big is that for a young player like him?
I think it's enormous, especially this young in his major league career, because I think that's one of the hardest things to accomplish when you get into trouble, getting yourself out of trouble, especially at this stage in his career. And one thing, too, that I think we should all keep in mind as we watch him, not only is he young in his major league season, he's young in his season in general. He just had one start before he came up. So he's working himself into the season overall and not just in his major league season. So I think he will get more crisp as we move through this thing. And I think you hit on something that is so difficult to do, and that is getting out of trouble. I think that's one of the big steps that we've seen from Yusei Kikuchi this season. I think that's one of the big strides that he has made. He had tough time getting out of situations in the past, and that's one thing he's been dynamite at this year.
Speaking of Kikuchi, it feels like the Mariners dodged a huge bullet. What's the latest with him?
Yeah, that was scary to say the least. I mean, it's too bad, too, because I feel like they were that line drive away from taking three or four from the Angels, because Yusei was on his game again. We've seen it the last six starts. He's been so good, and he was rolling against the Angels. Gave up a couple of solo home runs, but eight punch-outs, and it looked like he and the Mariners, after the grand slam from Fraley, was on the way to another win. It looked like they did dodge one. It seems like it's just a bruise. There wasn't a ton of swelling either, which is good. He hasn't gone on the IL yet, which is good. So hopefully he can make his next start. We'll see how it progresses the next few days. He's a guy that likes to stay in routine. So we'll see if that continues, if he can stay in his routine and make his next start. But at the very least, it doesn't sound like he'd be out for too long, which is great, because that's always scary. It was scary at the time. I mean, it was a wicked line drive. He couldn't put much weight on it. And given the injury situations we've seen already,
it's
hard not to think about the worst when you first saw it.
No doubt about that. It just seems like, man, can it get any worse? And they found a way to make it happen, unfortunately, Gary. But I want to go to something that's been really positive in terms of this organization, really a big surprise given how spring training went for this player. But J.P. Crawford, Gary, has been outstanding. And one of the big critiques for him is he's had hot streaks and he's had low points. So far, he's been really on it at the plate. And how big is that in terms of his development and for this team as they evaluate what they need to do in the future in terms of adding?
He has had a really good season. I mean, he's had a nice run offensively that stretches a lot of games now. This isn't a small sample we're talking about. This is well over a month and a half now, where he's been playing really well. You couple that with the defense, and you look at the metrics, defensive run saved, for example, he's been the second best position player in baseball, regardless of position, not just the second best shortstop, the second best player defensively. He's been that good defensively. We knew that. He won the Gold Glove last year, but coupled with what he's doing offensively, he's been excellent. I think when I look at the Mariners so far this season, Mitch Haniger has been their best position player in my mind. J.P. Crawford's been their second best. He's had that kind of season. He's had a huge impact defensively, and he's been so good offensively. He sprayed the ball around, but we've also seen him muscle up a little bit, too. He's hits. He's popped a couple of home runs along the way. I can't say enough about what he has done, and it does go to show he is just a great example of patience. Sometimes it just takes time, and especially this day and age, it's hard to have patience with prospects. But JP was a guy, he was a top prospect for Philadelphia for a long time, and sometimes it just takes guys a little longer. That being said, he's still not played a full major league season. We think of JP as this veteran, has been around for a long time. Most games he's played was 93 in a season, and that was in 2019. So, he is, I think, working his way into himself, if that makes sense. I think that's what we're saying.
Absolutely, Gary. And my big question, I mean, Stacy and I talked about this, a few weeks ago, really, before everybody else, in terms of JP really standing out and making this a really difficult situation for the Mariners in terms of what they want to do heading in the offseason. Because all the talk has been, Gary, I know you've heard it, know it's been part of the conversation, is there's all these really there's these big time free agent prospects that will be out there in free agency this next year in 2022. And that's kind of been the conversation, that they need to go out and get one of those guys. JP's certainly putting a wrench in those plans. Do you see if he's playing at this level and continues to show that throughout the season, that maybe they pivot and start to second guess that? Or do you think that there's a possibility that maybe they could move him to second base? Or what's your thought process there?
I think it is too early to speculate on that at this point. Just, it's the beginning of June. There's still a lot of season left to be played. There's a lot of questions that we're still looking for answers for. But man, if this is him, if this is the guy, it would be hard to pivot away from that. And I mean, that's what you want, right? You're looking for your young guys to answer questions. You're looking for the young guys, you're looking for the guys to step forward, guys you want to build around. That's what you're looking for. And maybe JP is one of those guys. Maybe he's answering that right now, that he's going to be one of the guys you build around.
Gary, I know that we spent some time talking about Kelnick. I just want to quickly cycle back. I know that there are a lot of people looking at more advanced analytics and feeling a little more reassured about his at-bats so far, even though you haven't seen the result in the form of, hits and actually getting on base because of those hits and not just walks. What are you seeing from him? When you go up and you look at him, it feels like there is little to take away because of those hits, but we have still seen him at the plate 83 times.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm probably in that camp. I'm not as concerned as some people are, because you look at like the strikeout rate, for example, he's not getting dominated. He's not getting overwhelmed. The strikeout rate is good. It's fine. It's totally fine. His walk rate actually is above average too, which is great to see. It's interesting when you look at the progression. That series in Oakland, for example, he put the ball in play 13 times, 7 of those were 95 plus hard hit, which is great. If you do that consistently, the numbers are going to be there. Now, he hasn't done that at the same rate since, so he hasn't been hitting the sweet spot. He hasn't barreled it up since then, but I'm still encouraged by what I've seen overall. And I think there's a couple bigger picture things to keep in mind here. One is, this happens. I mean, Alex Bregman is a great example. He's one of the best hitters in the game, right? And his career started 1-for-32. I mean, it's something that happens. Mercedes, the rookie from this year, who got off to a ridiculous start. And overall, his numbers look great. I mean, he was batting over 400 after the first month. Right now, he's currently in a 1-for-30. I mean, it's the kind of thing that happens. It really stands out when it's the first time we're seeing him and he's making his major league debut. The other thing to keep in mind that I think is even different than any other years you want to compare it to is any young player, not just Kelenic, they're being dropped into a very difficult hitting environment. I think it's the most difficult since 1968. You look at the numbers, and hitting is really, really hard. It's as hard as it's ever been. And hitting for a young guy is really hard, and you put that together, and it's difficult. It's really difficult. But I think big picture that he's going to be just fine.
Yeah, that's some great points that you make there, Gary, and definitely great perspective on the Kelenic situation there. Definitely something to keep an eye on. But something that stands out from what you said, speaking of walk rates, how about Jake Fraley? I mean, Jake Fraley has been absurd.
The weirdest slash line I've ever seen.
It's insane. It's unexplainable. I mean, what has really stood out to you about Jake Fraley and his return back and the impact he's been able to make and the insane walk rate that this guy has?
Well, clearly he strikes fear into every pitcher in the American League.
That's absolutely right.
That's the lesson we can learn. No, it's hilarious. I mean, it's the funny thing about baseball, right? We barely saw him in 19 and 20, so it's a small sample size, but he walked twice in the amount of time we saw him in 19 games, and here he is. He's racked up 16 so far. It's been pretty great. The 500 on-base percentage, whether you've played one game or 12, I think is pretty great. Mm-hmm. So he's got to feel pretty good about that. But, I mean, the power to go along with it now, the grand slam, which is pretty sweet, the three-run blast. And what I am what I'm really intrigued by, man, the Lewis injury was just devastating. That one just hurts my heart to watch, both on a personal level for everything that Kyle Lewis has been through. But, man, I think Kyle Lewis is really starting to take the next step offensively. When you look at everything that was happening underneath with his chase rate and his strikeout rate and walk rate, it was all in such a good place. And I felt like he was sitting on a huge month coming into June. So that one stings. But out of that is some opportunity. And we're going to see Fraley a lot. We're going to see Taylor Trammell a lot. Those guys are going to play. And I'm really intrigued by the start for Fraley here, given the now, the walks aren't going to continue at this rate, clearly, but I'm intrigued by what we're going to see from him. And this is going to be like the first, as long as he can stay healthy, the first long run we're going to see from Fraley in a Mariners uniform. Yeah, I'm interested.
Yeah, I am too. One of those things that's been kind of fun to watch. Every time it happens, I just laugh now. And also good for him, man, that grand slam, like you said the other day. I mean, if not for all the runs given up late, man, that would have been such a fun game for Seattle with Kikuchi's outing and Fraley, but the good news is both of those guys, at least hopefully, healthy for
we can only hope.
Knock on wood, Gary. It has been a pleasure.
One of the best beards in baseball too, I think. I think there's no question about that.
It has been a pleasure speaking with you. I honestly wish you could join us for even longer. We have so many questions about this team, but we'll have to get you on coming up here shortly to continue to look forward to what this team can do in June.
Yeah, sounds good. Anytime.
Thanks,
all right,
Gary.
Thanks, Gary.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. It's 12:15. That means it's time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacey.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
All right, first down to you, Jake. Russell Wilson, reported by you, will be attending OTA starting today. Now, is showing up for 2 weeks enough practice time for Russell Wilson?
Yes, it is. Everything that they've been going through, this is a veteran-heavy team. Now, it's been great to get some of the young guys. They've been participating in OTAs a little bit longer. Now they're going to have the reaction of stepping on the field with the veterans. And now this is what real football looks like. I'll never forget the process of feeling really good about myself and feeling really good about how I was playing with the Seahawks, my rookie rookie minicamp, the first time around. And then you get on the field with the vets, and it's like, man, this is an entirely different ball game. And how fun it is to watch these guys at the highest level compete against the guys at the highest level. It makes you better. It sharpens your skills, and that's what they're going to be able to experience as well over the next 2 weeks. You get Trey Brown, who's feeling really confident about himself. At the cornerback position. Now he's going to get to go up against Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. That's going to be a different experience for him. Now, as you look at Russell Wilson and the offense, they have I hate to say they have learned at a high level, but what they've been able to accomplish in the virtual offseason has been incredible. They are off to a really good start with this offense. The next step is getting out on the field together, Russell Wilson, Shane Waldron, the rest of the group. And I think these next 2 weeks are going to be a positive step in the right direction before they get into training camp. So, yes, I believe these next 2 weeks are absolutely going to be enough time for them to really, truly build in the right way, in the right direction.
Second down. All right, Stacey, Julio Jones going to Tennessee has really shook up the NFL. Do you think he will be a fit in Tennessee?
Not as good a fit as he would have been in Seattle or like 20 other teams, I got to say. Now, Tennessee, I do think, will be trying to take advantage of having Julio there in a way that I really wish Seattle would have when they traded for Jimmy Graham a little bit earlier in his career. I know that he suffered that injury his first year here. That aside, you look at pass play percentage. You have Atlanta coming in here. This is from 2020. In the top 10, they're number 9, 62%. You know, they're right around where Tampa Bay was, Buffalo, Philadelphia, ignore them. They were awful. Seattle was 14th at 59%. And then you scroll all the way to the bottom. And number 30, you have Tennessee, 49%, one of just three teams to pass the ball on fewer than 50% of plays. So, yeah, I think that they aren't going to suddenly veer from their overall philosophy and from one of their greatest weapons in Derrick Henry and decide to pass the ball 60% of the time, which is kind of what Atlanta's offense has been for the last couple years, like 60 to 65% passing plays. They've been a very pass-heavy offense for a little while now. So I don't know that it's the best fit for him. I trust that John Robinson is going to be trying to find a way to utilize him with Vrabel's offense quite often. John Robinson, GM for the Titans, did an interview with Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated. Really interesting takeaway where he said, and I'm paraphrasing, that part of what they loved about looking back at what Julio Jones could do was against Seattle when he was in there blocking, going head-to-head with Jamal Adams. And so they liked that he could potentially block. And if you're a Titans fan hoping to see them throw downfield at all times to Julio, you may not love hearing that. So we'll see what he looks like. It'll be a fascinating, fascinating watch.
Third down. All right, Jake, does Juwan James have a chance to win his grievance case against the Broncos?
This one is going to be really intriguing for me as I watch Juwan James take on the Denver Broncos and really the NFL. Because as you remember, the Denver Broncos said, we are not going to pay you your salary because you were not here participating in OTAs. This was a stance that they took that was very, very against the norm. Usually, the NFL and NFL teams are okay with players working outside of the program. Because guess what? You have to remain in shape. You don't want players did not work out at all in the offseason and then show up at training camp or to OTAs out of shape. You get downgraded for that. Guys get cut because of that. So it doesn't make any sense whatsoever that you would really demote somebody or that you would penalize them to such a severe degree like this. This was unique circumstances. The NFLPA was really trying to push back against having to show up again to OTAs at the time that was designed for them to show up. I believe Juwan James has a legit chance to win this case, because you cannot tell me that the Denver Broncos went out on their own, made this decision by themselves without the NFL kind of pushing and prodding them to say, hey, we've got to take a stance here. We've got to show these players that they can't just push back against us. We need to strike fear into them to get them to show up to OTAs. We need to show that the power is truly on our side, not with the players. So I think Juwan James is absolutely going to have a chance to win this case. How long will it take? I don't know, but definitely something to keep an eye on. And I think this could be a win for not only the player, but the NFLPA.
Fourth down. All right, Jake, with all the Seahawk vets showing up for OTAs and then mandatory minicamp starting next week, which player will you be closely paying attention to over the next 2 weeks?
Russell Wilson? Yes. Bobby Wagner? Yes. Dwayne Eskridge? Sure, yes. But the guy that I'll be paying the most attention to in terms of how they handle the next 2 weeks is going to be Jamal Adams. The reason why, Jamal Adams has not obviously signed an extension with Seattle. How is he going to approach that? This is year two for him here in Seattle. He doesn't necessarily have the system down to the point that Bobby Wagner had it down when he decided not to participate in OTAs. When he showed up, he was there, but didn't practice during the time when he did not have his contract extension signed. Will Jamal Adams take the same playbook that Bobby Wagner took? Will he not show up at all under the guise of maybe potentially saying that, hey, I had surgery this offseason, I need to continue to recover and stay away? What he decides to do, I think, will be incredibly important for the team and could potentially be impactful to how good the defense can be down the road. Am I going to panic that he's not out there practicing in OTAs? No. Am I going to be in love with the decision? Not necessarily, because I still think Jamal Adams needs to be out there practicing just as much as anybody else in terms of that defense, just because there was a lot of growth, there was a lot of learning that Jamal Adams had to do, and he was one of the players that you talk about assignment sound, you talk about accountability meetings. Although your most talented defender wasn't necessarily in the right spots all the time throughout the season. So I do think that Jamal Adams practicing over these next 2 weeks is important. I'll be very curious to see what he ends up deciding to do.
All right. The NCAA has a ton of money for you as long as you're not a college athlete. Plus, Naomi Osaka's Wimbledon start is put in doubt. That's coming your way next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
All right, when you open your phone, your laptop, and you see your Twitter timeline, you're going to see Nick Saban trending. Don't worry, he's not making countertop spaghetti or something else really weird. It's related to a contract.
That would be a new low of like recruiting, where you have these
Gen Z kids.
Yeah, Nick Saban at, what is he now, 60, 70 years old?
Yeah.
And you got these older coaches that are trying to keep themselves relevant and fresh and new and you see them doing all these TikTok stuff. Like, could you imagine seeing Nick Saban doing the countertop spaghetti or the countertop PB&J that we witnessed?
Please don't.
That abomination.
Nick.
That would be a new level of low. Nick Saban would never do
that. No, you are going to see Nick Saban's name trending because, I'm going off Bruce Feldman here, but this is all over the place. He and Alabama have reached a new deal which extends his current contract by 3 seasons to 8 years through February 2029. The base salary is $8.42 million. That's going to increase annually, though, throughout the length of the contract. So he will be making bank and playing until he's 105, or excuse me, coaching until he's 105 years old.
He should coach until the day that he decides not to. I mean, like, honestly, the thing that he has going on at Alabama right now is insane. It's absolutely insane. And you talk about the NCAA and all the you know, just ironic comments or ironic moves that Nick Saban gets $10 million, right? He gets $10 million per year, yet there's not enough money to pay college athletes. Or you see Alabama and the entire SEC across college football. You see Clemson, their facilities, how they upgrade it every year with something bigger and better.
Well,
and
you don't want to give the student athletes money because we don't have money after buying flat screens to put above their locker to display their name and stats.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. So at some point it gets absolutely absurd and ridiculous as to where they're spending their money and their resources. At some point, the facility, it's nice enough. Like, honestly, it's nice enough. There's only so much that you can put into your facility that these players actually use. I mean, like, I'll remember the players lounge, for example, when I was at Kansas or I was at Miami. Did we use it? Yeah, but did we use all the arcade games and everything else that was there? No, we didn't. They were just there as props for recruiting trips and all that. But I think that what Nick Saban has built there and how impressive it's been, though, Stacey, like, honestly, I think Alabama will be one of the rare programs that despite the openness of transfer rules, that you will still see Alabama be a legit program where they will have guys that will stay there for all 3-4 years and not transfer out because they know that it's a machine and a cog in a wheel that if you stay, it's going to develop you and it's going to get you out to the NFL. I mean, it's just been really impressive what Saban's done there in Alabama.
All right, next story here. You are also going to, on your timeline, see Naomi Osaka's name pop up again. Now, that's not just going to be kind of a repeating, a reiteration, a trend of her pulling out of the French Open. This is actually her withdrawing from another tournament. Now, it's going to be a tournament that's Berlin. It's the Berlin WTA. And if that doesn't like ring a bell in your mind, that's okay. What you need to know is that she's withdrawing from that tournament in Berlin, which is usually kind of a ramping up that people do to Wimbledon, which you absolutely have heard of before. Wimbledon begins June 28th. This Berlin one is, I think, June 14th, around mid-June. And so people are wondering now whether Naomi Osaka will pull out of Wimbledon.
I personally think that it will. That it will because of her not going to Wimbledon. Like, if you want to make as big of a statement as possible, and again, I don't know what the end game is for Osaka. If this is something where she is declaring that, hey, I'm not showing up because I don't like the system that's in place with the media, then I don't think you show up. She's referenced mental health. That's the focus, right? That's the thing that I think she's really honing in on and after and trying to get herself mentally right. But I'll be curious if there's this other external motivation there that ends up coming out of this, that maybe they change the way that they're talking to the media, or the format in which they currently have. I'll be curious to see how that ends up working together. But yeah, I mean, traditionally this is a ramp up period for Wimbledon, and it doesn't seem like it's positive for Osaka, who is one of the young stars of tennis, that she'll be participating in that.
Yeah, I hope she does. I love watching her, and I love what she brings, not just to the sport, but the conversation she started of late about mental health, and particularly how we talk about mental health in the world of sports, where we praise toughness and perseverance and grit. And what does it mean to be tough, right? This bigger conversation that she, in addition to many other athletes, have brought up. I don't know that there's an end game to her. Like, my impression of all this is maybe she genuinely is stepping away, not in a form of, you know, protest over the way that interviews are conducted or anything like that, but maybe to actually take time away, or to actually kind of take a break, or to step aside. In her second statement she released, she said that she was, you know, more introverted, that she doesn't really like being that kind of public eye, center of attention person. And the situation with the French Open made her that. So maybe she just didn't want to be under the spotlight for her own peace of mind for this tournament. I hope that she's at Wimbledon. Although, again, the reason this is trending, the reason you're going to see it, is because pulling out of the Berlin tourney may impact the chances she does that. Last story here. If you see Greg Olsen's name trending, don't worry, Curtis Rogers listening somewhere. It is not because he's re-signing with the Seattle Seahawks. This is actually one of the nice feel-good stories. Best story of the day. Best news of the day. TJ Olsen, the son of Greg Olsen, got a heart transplant on Friday, 8 days after going on the transplant list, and just 2 weeks after entering the hospital with his failing heart. Here is TJ.
Hi everybody, thank you for taking news with me, thank you for praying with me, congrats, all of you have gone to win, we love you guys, bye.
Awesome news from the Olsen family, and hoping for a speedy recovery for TJ.
Man, gonna make me cry just thinking of my boys, and yeah. Can't even imagine what the Olsen family's been going through, and so many other people around the world who dealing with these same situations, and seeing your kids struggle and go through something like what TJ is going through, I can't even imagine. So really happy for you, TJ. Big time news. Thank you for keeping us all updated. Thoughts and prayers are with you. We're wishing you the best of luck, and can't wait to see you on that recovery path, getting back at it, killing it in sports, and awesome news for the Olsen family.
All right. A Rams player is very upset that his team did not trade for Julio Jones. Question for you guys. Are you upset the Seahawks didn't trade for Julio Jones? Will missing out on Julio be the Seahawks' biggest regret of the offseason? That's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. My question for you guys, will missing out on Julio be the Seahawks' biggest regret of the offseason? From the 360, no.
Just very simply put.
Love that insight. I love it. But you know what?
Thank you for your analysis.
The answer for me is also no, Jake, but I'll start here. I'm going to start not in Seattle. I'm going to go a little further south, quite a bit further south to L.A. I'm going to start with Rams cornerback Jalen Ramsey, who was not pleased with L.A. not trading for Julio Jones. He said, per Twitter, "This is all it took for a generational guy, and we were out," quote, "of the Julio Jones sweepstakes, ! Wow, we would have been unstoppable for real with all them weapons, LOL. I mean, he's not really mad. I think he's just maybe annoyed, but not like actually mad.
Right, but then look at your cap situation. Like, the Rams are in cap hell. I mean, like, you look at their situation. They are, I don't even know how they were able to retain a lot of their players because of how bad their cap situation really truly was and is. So I think that Jalen Ramsey, it's like, it's more than just the draft capital that they gave up. It's the fact that Julio Jones is going to the Tennessee Titans $15.3 million cap hit and pay that you're having to give to him. That's a tough thing to do, that not only in any given year, but given the fact that you have a COVID year where it hurt your cap number. It decreased your cap number. So Jalen Ramsey, not really looking at the whole picture there when it comes to the Rams, but I'm just seriously glad that he did not go within the NFC West if it was not going to be the Seahawks. The Rams, the 49ers, the Cardinals, they had all been calling. They had all been intrigued by the situation, the Seahawks being one of them. And you and I both agree that there was no way that they were going to bring on Julio Jones at that $15.3 million number. But if that number had been decreased, I mean, you say half, I would even say $5 million left. If Julio Jones was at $10 million, his market, I think, would have increased drastically. I think the Seahawks would have been incredibly interested in that. I think the rest of the teams in the NFC West would have been even more interested than what it ended up being for Julio Jones. But I don't think that this is something that ultimately I'm looking back and saying that they're going to regret not making this decision. But if you were in on this from the get-go, it still doesn't make any sense to me why you wouldn't have been more aggressive in going out and getting somebody like Corey Linsley this offseason. If you're willing to spend that money, wouldn't your offensive line being truly, totally revamped and upgraded be even better for the weaponry that you have right now? Because I think weapons-wise, DK, Tyler, Gerald Everett, Dwayne Eskridge, you go down the list of guys, Chris Carson, you're in a pretty good spot right now. Julio Jones would have just been that, not just a splash, it would have been a cannonball type of move in terms of it being over the top.
Do we know that the Seahawks weren't in on Corey Linsley, weren't in Joe Tooney?
They were not.
They were not?
Not even in consideration.
You know that for a fact.
I am pretty confident in that.
Why wouldn't they be in on Corey Linsley?
Because in their estimation, it was more money than they were willing to spend on a center. It was more money than what they felt like that market was too much for what they deemed would have been appropriate for their given cap space and how they wanted to spread the wealth out in terms of upgrading their defensive line and making other additions across the board.
Okay, well, I mean, to their credit, I'm not just backing. I think you need a really good offensive line to win a Super Bowl most of the time, so I'm not excusing it. To their credit, free agency is typically when the biggest stars get kind of overpaid. Like, you throw money and get into bidding wars with people to try to get big talent.
Correct.
I would imagine they were curious about Joe Tooney. I would imagine they were curious about who's the...
of course.
Did he go to Washington or come from Washington?
Stacey, I can be curious about a jacket at Gucci, but I'm going to look at that price tag and immediately walk
Jake,
out the door.
Jake, let's be real. You could never pull off a jacket at Gucci.
I know, but I'd be curious about it. Like, man, could I maybe pull that off?
I think you should.
I'd be interested, and I see it on high fashion models all the time. Like, could I... maybe could I make that work? Maybe. But then, you know, reality hits you in the face. You're like, no, that's too much for me.
I wish you wouldn't have said yes. That came out so much meaner than I meant it to. It was supposed to be a joke where you made fun of me, and now I'm just the jerk. Look at
that. It's okay, Stacey. We all know the role that you really, truly play, and
that's
everybody's
true.
Just getting to see that
yep.
now in the public
We're
eye instead of behind the scenes.
I'm
so,
the bully at 710.
You are, 100%.
It is what it is. But look.
That,
you were saying.
That, to me, is what really came out of that situation. So if you're in on the Julio Jones sweepstakes and you're looking at that $15 million number and you're like, I think we can eat that, that wouldn't make much sense to me whatsoever. But I think that Julio Jones is would have actually worked here more than what people think it would have. I think there's a large contingency that say, oh, that wouldn't have worked. That would be a horrible move. That would be such a bad use of assets. And I don't think it would have been. I think it would have been extremely dynamic. I think it would have been extremely positive for this team. But I don't think that they ever really truly had a realistic shot of pulling it off.
Yeah, I think people, I said it in four down territory, too often compare because of Tennessee's use of Derrick Henry and kind of being a run first offense that Tennessee and Seattle are somehow the same. And those would have been similar situations. That's where Seattle was like 4 years ago. Last year, they were 14th in pass play percentage, right around the middle of the league, hovering around 60%. Tennessee was 30th. Below 50%. Like, that is a big difference. It doesn't seem like it, 59 and 49 or whatever. That's a huge difference in terms of how often an NFL offense is passing the ball or how often they're using those wide receivers downfield. I think Julio would have been a better fit. In fact, I think he would have been a good fit. I am not bothered at all that they didn't make the move given his salary. And I think that if you are Russell Wilson and you're calling for this move to be made, you got to kind of hold up a mirror and say, okay, let's see where money's going right now. Well, $35 million is going to you, and then let's see where else we can spend. We have we're paying our left tackle this much. We just paid a guard $9.5 million. We've got Tyler Lockett we just extended. We've got DK we've got to pay. We've got Chris Carson we just brought in. Now, are there areas, and we've talked about this a million and ten times, where the Seahawks could have drafted an offensive lineman more effectively or could have paid someone more effectively and saved some money on talent? Yeah, sure. Like, there are areas where you just have to draft better and scout better and do whatever better when so much of your money is going to be tied up in stars. That's kind of the bind that every other team that's a good team is in, though.
Right.
I don't think it's a coincidence that the three other teams in the NFC West, according to Albert Breer, all reached out to ask about a trade, and none of them could actually do it.
Right. It should make you feel better, right? Because all those teams were actually intrigued and interested in this player. And yes, there's a lot of questions marks about Julio Jones. 32 years old, is coming off a series of injuries. But make no mistake, he can still make an impact for a given roster. I believe that heading into this next year, Julio Jones being paired up with A.J. Brown is going to be a really good combination.
Deadly.
Now, how explosive can it be? That remains to be seen. But I think that when you're talking about specifically for the Seahawks offense, what was the area that they really struggled in last year?
Intermediate passing game.
Yeah, but
or
there was
short
one. There was one area, Stacey. You
Running
were
backs.
Hammering every single week. You were furious.
Points per game.
No, they were pretty.
There's
good
so many areas. I was so mad all the time.
You were not. It was third downs.
Yes, you're right.
You came in
they were
every
one of the
week,
worst teams
highlighting third down every single week,
yes.
And because they were one of the league's worst. In that area, how you get better is creating better play design, things of that nature. But it's more about do you have winners? Do you have matchup winners for you? Not just in play design, but in personnel. And the thing that I'm more optimistic about this year than I was last year is that I believe you have more winners. Julio Jones makes you feel really good about the ability across the board to have winners. DK, Tyler, Julio, Gerald Everett, Will Dissly, Kobe Parkinson, you look at the entire group, Dwayne Eskridge, you look at the entire group, and that becomes extremely difficult for defenses to truly contain you on third down. That is the area that I think that it really would have helped. Red zone, obviously. But as you move forward and you address this team, I still think that they're in a good position. And that's why today I'm not overly upset. I'm not too concerned that they did not get Julio Jones. Just thank goodness he is not in a 49er or Rams jersey,
no doubt,
for that matter. That's the only thing that I really care about. That would have driven me insane.
Jake, you made such a fantastic point. To me, it felt a little bit like an exercise in self-reflection about how much I complain about bad offenses or struggling offenses. And you know what? I'm not going to stop. That's who I am.
It's on brand. It's on brand.
Thank you very much. All right. Did Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner hurt their team's chances at a Super Bowl by missing time this offseason? I think not. But Jake has some interesting perspective into how important the next 2 weeks can be when it comes to building up a contender. That's coming your way next.